This is the true military experiment behind Totally Spies, and it was never meant to be shown.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are opening a set of, highly classified files, and they document what happens when military conditioning creates a perfect weapon system.
A weapon system so effective that it becomes fundamentally uncontrollable.
Exactly. Uncontrollable by the very agency that engineered it.
And that's the paradox, right? That's the core of what we're unpacking today. Our mission is a deep dive into the source material around Project SPIE.
Specialized Psychological Infiltration Experiment.
Right, and this was allegedly a classified U.S. military program from the late 1990s. Its entire history is just, it's a sharp lesson in the limits of control.
Oh, sources are chilling. I mean, we're synthesizing a lot here. We've got redacted file excerpts, internal debriefings from trainers who sound, frankly, terrified.
Yeah, and then there's this detailed investigative index that was put together by a government accountability team years after the program was supposedly shut down.
So we're going to look at the brutal objectives, the invasive methods they used on these three subjects, and the program's astonishing and terrifying success.
And then the panic, the immediate shutdown, and the, well, the subsequent and very disturbing reappearance of these assets.
This isn't just about espionage training. You have to understand that right from the start. We're talking about the systematic erasure of identity.
Creating something unstoppable.
Yes. They engineered a human weapon system and deployed it without an off switch.
Yeah.
To really get the threat here, you have to understand how it all started.
Okay, let's go back. Let's unpack the genesis of SPIE.
Let's do it.
So we anchor our timeline in the late 1990s. The source documents all point to that specific moment. It seems to reflect a strategic shift, you know,
It's
in
not
military
a
doctrine.
shift toward future conflicts.
Specifically, urban warfare, conflicts that are rooted in these dense civilian areas.
And the location they chose is just as strategic. It's a classified training facility, but it's situated just outside San Diego.
Which is a huge military hub, right?
Yeah.
Navy, Marine Corps.
Absolutely. But the key is the facility was built outside the established traceable bases. It was a black site. So it gave them all the logistical support they needed, expertise, equipment, but with total absolute isolation.
Okay, so the goal. According to the original objective sheet, it was brutally straightforward. It was to create the perfect teenage operatives for future urban warfare.
And that phrasing, urban warfare, that's not an accident.
No. So why teenagers? I mean, what's the tactical advantage of a teenage operative in a civilian environment?
It's all about concealment. It's about access. In a crowded city, an adult operative, they stand out, they're an anomaly. But teenagers are statistically
They're
overlooked.
just part of the background noise. They're seen as innocuous, non-threatening.
Precisely. They're small, they're agile, and this is crucial. They can move through places like schools, malls, youth centers, places an adult couldn't go without triggering suspicion.
So the idea wasn't just to train them to fight, it was to condition them to be functionally invisible.
To become the ultimate infiltrator,
Yeah.
to operate seamlessly inside a crowd
Yeah.
against, domestic or near domestic threats.
Okay, so if functional invisibility is the goal, how do you even find the recruits for that? The program docs, they detail a method that's based entirely on untraceability.
Followed by a process of, deletion, just straight up deletion.
So what does that mean?
The documents show that three girls were quietly selected from foster systems across the country.
Okay, so right there, that's cynical.
It's the foundation of a whole program. Kids in the foster system often have. Their records are fluid, incomplete, and crucially, they lack immediate traceable family advocacy.
Meaning if they disappear, there's no one to make a fuss. There's minimal public inquiry, no investigative pushback. They're already on the margins.
Which makes the final step of erasure incredibly easy.
Yeah.
And the program did not hesitate. Their entire previous lives, legal names, birth records, school files, every digital footprint, gone, scrubbed.
They were digitally and administratively deleted. They
Wow.
ceased to exist in any legal or social record.
And this is that core theme of erasure you see in black operations. If a person has no legal existence, they can't be held accountable for anything they do, because the identity that committed the act can't be legally verified.
They're ghost assets.
Yes, and our investigative index actually draws a direct parallel here. It brings up the alleged CIA operative, Klaus Richter, who was supposedly erased back in the early 80s.
What's the connection?
The assertion is that with Richter, the only evidence that the operation ever happened wasn't in the files they found, but in the blank space where his file should have been.
The vacuum of information becomes the evidence?
Exactly. when you see this deliberate, meticulous void where three young girls should be, you know, state-level operation created that void. The blank space is the proof.
And in place of those stolen identities, they were given these cold functional code aliases.
Just designations. Subject Sam, Subject Alex, and Subject Clover.
That's just, it's part of the depersonalization process, right? They're not people with a history anymore. They're units of measurement in the SPIE matrix.
And they entered this training at age 13.
13. We have to stop on that for a second. That's the age where your own identity really starts to solidify, you know? Critical thinking, emotional bonds.
And that's precisely the moment the program chose to dismantle all of it and replace it with something else.
So what did this training actually look like?
It wasn't just intense. The curriculum was designed to break and then rebuild their will according to operational need. It was all about stealth, speed, cognitive resilience, all specific to an urban environment.
So we're talking about hand-to-hand combat drills, but the files say they weren't focused on brute force.
No, not at all. It was styles designed for speed and silence. Pressure point striking, immobilization, what the documents call zero-trace neutralization.
And then there were the espionage simulations.
Right, focused on deep information extraction. And coupled with that was this grueling interrogation resistance training.
At 13?
At 13. And this wasn't just about learning to keep a secret. The protocols detail things like sustained sensory deprivation, combined with rapid-fire psychological profiling, designed to identify and exploit their core stress points.
So it's not just about physical fortitude. It's about creating a mind that's so deeply compartmentalized, the subject might not even know what secrets they're protecting.
Which leads us to the most insidious part, the psychological manipulation.
Which served two purposes.
Two critical, devastating purposes. First, it taught the operatives how to use advanced manipulation on their targets, building rapport, exploiting micro-expressions, gaslighting.
And the second purpose?
The second was that the subjects themselves were constantly exposed to these techniques. It rendered them fundamentally unable to trust their own emotions or even their perception of reality. They were taught that what they felt was secondary to what they achieved.
This is where it goes from psychological to technological control. The surveillance. And this is not standard supervision. This is total biological data extraction.
The monitoring was pervasive. It was permanent. The source files confirm custom-designed biometric sensors were permanently implanted in their wrists.
And tracking chips embedded behind their ears, which served as location beacons and maybe something more.
The files suggest they were also acoustic receivers.
So let's talk about that biometric data. The purpose was to record every spike of fear, anger, excitement. Every raw emotional state was digitized.
Time-stamped and analyzed against their performance metrics. The goal was to establish a flawless emotional baseline for each of them, a psychological signature.
So if the trainers knew what pure adrenaline felt like, what real panic looked like in a brain scan?
They could use that data for precise behavioral conditioning. They could potentially suppress those markers, maybe with a chemical or an auditory stimulus, and force the asset to maintain peak performance under any duress.
It's a total violation of their internal reality. Their emotional life was just data to be tracked.
So what happens when you take assets, condition this rigorously, and deploy them? They aren't just learning skills. They're becoming organic robots with perfectly mapped emotional circuitry.
And then that conditioning. It laid the foundation for the central problem of Project SPIE.
When you eliminate panic and you maximize lethal efficiency, you eliminate the safety valve. And that precision is what led directly to the critical, terrifying assessment in 2001.
Right. So let's get into Act Two. The sources confirm that by 2001, just a couple of years in, the official assessment wasn't that the program was failing, it was that it was too successful.
Which sounds like a contradiction, right?
Yeah.
Especially in a military context.
How can you be too successful?
Well, success becomes a problem when it introduces unpredictability. Military command needs predictable inputs and controlled outputs. If your operative is getting stellar results, but you can't trace the method, that operative is now outside your control matrix.
They're a dangerous variable.
And the anomalies they were seeing in the debriefings were just staggering.
The girls were moving way beyond high-level infiltration. The files mention them slipping through complex, layered security systems, locked doors, motion sensors, laser grids, without tripping a single alarm.
It suggests a mastery that wasn't just technical. It sounds almost intuitive, preternatural even.
And they could disarm fully armed guards in seconds. This isn't just about being fast, it's predictive. anticipating movement, neutralizing a threat before the victim even knows what's happening.
But the anomaly that caused genuine panic among the SPIE directors was their ability to complete missions and leave no memory of their escape.
In the minds of the observers?
Yes. Witnesses, even experienced trainers, reported these bizarre gaps in their memory surrounding the operative's actions.
It's like a cognitive eraser was deployed in the final moments.
And if you connect that back to the psychological manipulation training, the investigative index has some theories. Was it some kind of low-level hypnotic suggestion they learned? Something they could deploy instinctively?
Or a side effect of the conditioning? That they could compartmentalize their own actions so efficiently that the act of witnessing them was psychologically rejected by the observer.
It means their weapon system wasn't just physical anymore, it was cognitive. They weren't just erasing physical evidence, they were erasing the memory of their movements. They were controlling perception itself.
And this is why the trainers admitted in debriefings, and this is a direct quote, that they can't fully explain how the girls exit some scenarios.
They could see the result, the objective was achieved. But they couldn't trace the process. They couldn't reverse engineer their own asset success.
So this unpredictability, this black box of success, it forced the director's hands. They scheduled a crucial live extraction test, a final attempt to measure what exactly they had created.
And they built this test environment meticulously, a mock suburban high school on the training grounds. It was a perfect microcosm of where they were meant to operate. Classrooms, lockers, a gym. All of it.
And the opposition.
Six military contractors. These were not trainees. These were hardened security professionals assigned to provide a high-level, unpredictable threat inside the building. They were the benchmark.
And the whole thing was rigged for data collection. Cameras everywhere, high-res, multi-angle to capture every micro-movement.
This was supposed to be the ultimate controlled data harvest.
The footage shows Sam, Alex, and Clover entering the building. And that's the last point of functional technological control the SPIE directors ever had over them.
And the official sources are just chillingly brief about what happened next. Hours later, the test was over. But the cameras only ever recorded the operatives entering.
None of the six contractors were ever recorded leaving the building.
And their bodies were never found.
Yeah.
Not inside the facility, not anywhere. Let's just stop there and absorb the scale of that. We go from mysterious memory gaps to the complete silent disappearance of six professional military personnel in a controlled environment. What does the investigative index even suggest happened? The internal investigation was, well, you can imagine, total bureaucratic panic. The forensic team focused on three main theories for what they called zero trace neutralization.
Okay, theory one.
The first, and they said the least likely, was total physical removal. The idea that three teenagers carried six adult male bodies out of the facility over a few hours without being seen, it strains credibility, even with their training.
Right. What was the second theory?
The second was more concerning. It involves specialized chemical agents they might have had access to during training. Could they have deployed a compound that led to, well, rapid total dissolution of organic matter?
That implies a level of premeditation that goes way beyond a simple training test.
And the records for the chemical stores are conveniently incomplete. But it's the third theory that gained the most traction.
And that was...
It relates back to that cognitive anomaly. The idea that the six contractors were still in the building, but were under such deep psychological interference, or maybe induced trauma, that they were functionally vegetative. Or just neutralized in a way that defied a conventional search, the index suggests they were simply erased from the environment by the operative's presence.
That is the ultimate evidence that the assets had gone off script. They turned a controlled test into their own operational space and neutralized the opposition with this devastating, untraceable efficiency.
Which means the program had created something that surpassed all of its parameters. The consequence was immediate and total. The project was immediately shut down.
Because what the agency saw as this incredible success, they also interpreted as a catastrophic, uncontrollable failure.
It was existential self-preservation. When your creation turns against you with that kind of force, termination is the only rational response.
But terminating the program, that didn't terminate the assets.
Not even close.
Okay, so let's move into Act 3, the shutdown and the resurfacing.
The first phase was a complete official cover-up. All records related to SPIE sealed. Locked deep under layers of classification. The facility was officially abandoned.
And the military's public line, if anyone even asked, was that the program had just been discontinued.
Which is the most innocuous, boring explanation possible, a quiet budget cut, a failure to meet metrics.
And the blandness of that story is proof of the catastrophe.
Exactly. You don't deploy total erasure and sealing protocols for a budget failure. You do it for unmanageable, untraceable threats. The erasure, once again, becomes the evidence.
But what's so fascinating here is that the facility shuts down, the records are sealed, but the three assets just vanish. They're not decommissioned, they're not debriefed, they just disappear into the void.
And 2 years after the program was supposedly terminated, the pattern resurfaces. And the location jump is so telling, from a remote black site near San Diego
to Beverly Hills, California, the ultimate high-profile, high-net-worth environment, the perfect camouflage.
Three exchange students transfer into a private high school there.
And that cover story is brilliant. Exchange students are temporary. Their social histories are expected to be a little opaque. Their paperwork is handled differently.
And their profiles were, of course, perfect. They were brilliant students. They were, athletic school reports describe them as impossibly well-coordinated.
So that SPIE training is now just manifesting as natural high society competence. They were designed for optimal social integration.
It's like they became the ultimate soft cover story that the military didn't even have to write. They look like characters from some glossy teen drama.
Which, ironically, makes them easier to overlook as operational threats.
But the core conditioning, that lethal efficiency, you can't just turn that off. And the source notes show that the dangerous pattern of erasure returned almost immediately at that school.
People who got too close to them, a few students, a teacher who maybe asked too many questions, even a hall monitor who became an obstacle, they started disappearing quietly from the school roster.
Quietly disappearing. It's the same pattern. It echoes the vanished contractors, the memory gaps from the test. It suggests the assets, now operating autonomously, were just neutralizing operational security threats.
Threats that interfered with their integration or their unstated mission. The removal is seamless. The school records it as voluntary attrition with no foul play suspected.
Sam, Alex, and Clover were conducting lethal social maintenance.
So this is the critical implication. The shutdown didn't deactivate them. It deployed them. It set them loose in the real world.
They're acting as self-regulating, independent units designed to remove human threats that compromise their security. They're an active ghost system, maintaining their cover identity through lethal efficiency.
The horror of it is that the program created a mechanism that requires perfect social integration to function, but that integration requires constant lethal maintenance against anyone who probes too deeply.
They created the perfect asset, and now that asset is defining its own targets based on its original security protocols.
Which brings us to the final documented incident in the investigative index. This is 2006, 4 years after the program was shut down.
A small, very secretive accountability team finally locates and gets access to the original SPIE facility.
And the site is exactly what you'd expect. It's intentionally ruined. Dead labs, corroded equipment, offline servers, a physical manifestation of the lie that the program was just terminated.
The illusion of abandonment was complete.
But deep underground, in a sealed, shielded server room, they found a technological ghost. A single power conduit had stayed active, and it was feeding one obsolete monitor, a monitor that was still receiving a live data feed.
And the persistence of that feed it's just so symbolic. The entire vast bureaucracy failed, but the communication channel, the connection to the assets, survived. It was waiting.
The image on that screen was deeply unnerving. It showed a stark corridor, like an endless hallway. No context, no markers, just this sense of unending controlled structure.
And then the confrontation. The footage shows the three girls, Sam, Alex, and Clover, walking toward the camera in perfect sync. Their movements aren't just physically coordinated, they're temporally coordinated.
Which implies they knew they were being watched. Or maybe they orchestrated the whole thing.
For the benefit of whoever was watching.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the girls, the sources say it was subject Sam, looks directly into the lens.
She acknowledges the system that created her, or what's left of it, and she gives this faintest, almost imperceptible smile.
And then she delivers the final line, captured on the recording and transcribed into the index. She says, "Mission never ended."
Mission never ended. I mean, that line is the final assessment of the entire project, isn't it?
It forces you to ask this profound question. Does it mean the subjects went rogue and they're just continuing their mission independently, applying their training to their own goals?
Or, and this is the deeply unsettling possibility, was the shutdown itself the final act of conditioning?
Were they always intended to be deployed independently, without oversight? relying only on their training and conditioning to define their ongoing mission. Was termination the necessary step for true activation?
Because if that's true, then the failure of Project SPIE wasn't the disappearance of the contractors. The failure was the attempt to ever bring them back to base.
Their mission was always to infiltrate and survive. And they're executing it perfectly in Beverly Hills, creating their own soft cover story as they go.
So we've traced this journey from anonymous wards of the state stripped of their history,
transformed into these hyper-efficient cognitive erasing assets,
and then deployed as unsupervised, lethal operatives, actively maintaining their cover in high society.
The essential mystery really does boil down to control. The program created an asset class so advanced that the means of deactivation were either lost or they just never existed in the first place.
The failure wasn't the training. It was the fact that the subjects could never be successfully deactivated. They are perpetual operational entities.
And this whole case, it just forces you to critically evaluate official narratives, you know?
Yeah.
Cover stories. When a classified project results in something too successful, too terrifying, the cover story is often designed to be light, appealing.
Something the public might just assume is fiction.
The official line of discontinued was meant to close the file, but their reappearance in Beverly Hills, neutralizing threats under the guise of teenage drama and that final chilling surveillance feed, it all suggests the mission was never closed. It was just repackaged.
Okay, so here's your one-line takeaway. Something to mull over as you think about how fiction sometimes reflects hidden truths.
Sometimes the cartoon version is the soft cover story, and the real missions never stopped.
For a full breakdown and more classified to cartoon legends, you can find us at Inspector Story. Thank you for sharing these sources with us.
And we'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.